What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 23, Overuse Injuries for May 16th, 2012. Real quick, we only have a short warm-up. I have a Twitter pick of the week, and so you know I'm kind of active on Twitter, and so my Twitter pick of the week is at Injury Picks. And so for athletic trainers, it's really a good site. They, you know, athletic trainers always have their smartphones or cameras or something, and they're always like, hey, wait, don't set that finger back in place. Let me take a picture real quick. And so now you can take that picture.
Why the kid's going,
yeah, why the kid's crying, or, you know, why the femur's sticking out of his leg. You know, you snap a picture real quick so you can show people, so you can brag, or you can, you know, educate people, whatever. So at Injury Picks on Twitter is a really cool, and I think it's a relatively new site or name, whatever it is on Twitter. So at Injury Picks, but just be warned, there are, you know, it's injury pictures, so it's might be something gross, might be nasty. So just be warned if you're going to look at it, but for athletic trainers, should be nothing new. We see that stuff all the time.
Your pain is our entertainment.
Exactly.
I'm going to go look at that.
Go for it. Follow them. So, with the warm-up out the way, real quick, I am, of course, your host, Jeremy Jackson.
Hey, Doc Hill.
Sarah.
I am Bubba Wilson.
Back Mariah. Again. And, sorry, Mariah.
Oh, Mariah.
Oh, no.
Anna.
And we have Brian, Fernando, and Michelle, pictures and other type things. Again, this is our, I think, our third live broadcast, recording it live. But also, so if you want to watch it, if you want to listen live, I guess if you're listening now, then you're listening live. But if you want to listen live, you can go to ustream.tv and then type in Sports Medicine Broadcast for the channel, and that can listen live. And then once you do that, because we're at the school, they have the chat feature blocked, so you can't chat with us straight on Ustream. But if you go to todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast, you can comment on there. We got some people watching that, so if you throw a comment in today's meet, then they can put whatever your comment is on the show. We can ask Bubba, or, you know, if you want to ask Sarah what color her hair bow is today, then you can do that, and she'll throw it out there. All right, so,
or you can text Jackson.
Well, again, my wife is going to try the today's meet today. That way we can
she's
check
on.
And make
she
sure.
She has that. Been.
She's
yeah, she said it's gross yeah. for the pictures.
Oh, wow.
Oh, she's already looked?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I showed her some of them.
Sarah, like, what color is your hair bow?
It's white.
All right. Thank you, beautiful. So there's my beautiful wife again. She's listening in and chatting on the today's meet. So we know it's all working. And it just makes it a little bit more fun and interactive, and maybe we'll get somebody, like Boba said earlier, in calling in from Seattle, well, texting in anyways. So, we need to save plenty of time for Boba, since he likes to talk.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just real quick, in case you didn't listen before, Boba Wilson is an outreach athletic trainer working for Memorial Hermann Hospital Southeast. He's been in the profession as an athletic trainer for 21 years, lots of different things, lots of different jobs and roles and different things like that. He was a president of GHATS, which is Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society. It's an organization for Houston athletic trainers, and they put on a huge student work trainer workshop, which is really cool. I went to back when I was in high school. And he is the current TSATA Region Board of Director. So I think it's a short version of Bubba. And then he's going to be talking about this today about overuse injuries, focusing on throwing sports, but a couple different issues there. So he's brought in some research and things like that.
I think he's going to be focusing on baseball. Some of the things.
Yeah, most of it. We can adapt it to some other sports as well.
Right. So, in case this is somebody's first time listening, but why don't you give
I
us
never
a,
heard of Bubba, so.
Yeah, why don't you give us a real quick version of, like, your background, where you're from, just real quick.
Grew up in Fort Worth, went to school at Baylor University in Waco. I guess there's only one Baylor, and it's only one Waco, mercifully. And basically, for the bulk of my professional life, I've lived in the greater Houston area. I did spend a couple of years outside of Houston, but other than that, I've been in this area.
All right. That'll work, right? Sorry, there was a phone buzzing on the desk, and it threw us off for a second. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of stopped.
It's not mine.
Michelle. All right.
It was Michelle's. Hey, Jackson, look at my shirt.
Yeah, there you go. She's wearing the G-Hat shirt. Yeah. Somebody get a picture of that. Make sure you get a picture of Mariah. She's wearing her G-Hat shirt.
Oh, okay.
See, I don't think G-Hats is on Twitter, or I would
No, tweet. Probably not.
Yeah. I would tweet them if that picture if they were. So, G-Heads, if you're listening.
they'll be on now, yeah.
All right. So, real quick, we want to go ahead and define overuse injuries according to WebMD. So, I'm going to read this to you. So, if I mess up, it's because I...
Because you can't read.
Because I have trouble reading out loud. All right. Overuse injuries occur from stressing your joints, muscles, or other tissues without allowing them to recover. For example, throwing a baseball at high speeds over and over can stress your shoulder joint and cause injury to part of that joint, the rotator cuff. Stress fractures, in which a bone breaks from pressure placed on it through activity, are also common for athletes. Anyone who does too much activity without proper conditioning or proper equipment is at risk for injury. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, you did pretty good.
All right.
Yeah, some of the examples listed on WebMD are Achilles tendon problems. A sign may be a pain at the back of your heel, bursitis, and or a tendon injury. This is a good one here. Tendinopathy?
It's tendinopathy.
Tendinopathy?
Tendinopathy. Yes.
Tendinopathy. Okay.
Monopoly.
That's the new way to say tendinitis.
Tendinopathy for tendinitis people. As a sign, maybe pain in the joints or in your tendons. And then remember, tendons are what connects bone to bone. So, or muscle to bone. Which one is it? Muscle to bone. That's right. Muscle to bone. Get it right. Lower back pain, which could be a lot of overuse. Patellofemoral pain syndrome, which is a sign, maybe the pain in the front of the knee, right below the kneecap, which the patella is the kneecap. Plantar fasciitis, which is a sign, is on the pain in the sole of the foot. Rotator cuff disorders, maybe a sign of shoulder or arm pain. And, of course, the old tennis elbow. And now let's get Bubba's opinion on some of those.
All right, yeah, so pretty much now we're going to kind of turn it over to Bubba. All right, so start us off with whatever you got for us, Bubba, about overuse injuries.
Well, basically, if you get on ESPN.com or some of those type websites, I know a year or two ago there's a program out now called STOP, and it's an initiative by Dr. Andrews to prevent overuse injuries in adolescents. And the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons has a figure out that says 50% of all injuries seen in middle school and high school athletes are due to overuse, okay? 50%. And so if you look at some of the research Dr. Andrews done, if we take baseball that we talked about, I was going to talk a little bit about or a lot about baseball, year-round play is the number one risk factor for injuries requiring surgery. Okay, and that year-round play increases that risk factor 5 to 6 times greater than the average individual. All right, so if you're setting yourself up for surgery, and if we look at that, let's say you are most of what we're going to talk about is from a pitching standpoint when we think about overuse in baseball. If we look at you're 5 to 6 times more likely to require surgery from an injury. All right, if you just look at some of those, let's look at a couple of those stats. Right now, a couple of years ago when I was at his course and they were talking about this, there is no pitcher in Major League Baseball right now or at that time, about 09, that had ever had a scope put in their throwing shoulder before they made it to the major leagues. So that means if you're a high school, college, or minor league athlete and you're a pitcher and you get a scope put in your throwing shoulder, you will not make it to the major leagues. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right, so real quick, you said year-round sports. Does that mean like
all sports?
No.
Well, like
same sport.
So if we're playing baseball all year long.
Right.
Can you real quick define what all year means? Like, does it mean
basically all year is greater than 8 months?
Greater than 8 months.
All right.
All right.
So let me I'll go some risk factors off of that, but okay. let's talk about some of those stats real quick. Okay. 15% of pitchers drafted make it to the major leagues. Okay, and we just talked about before we started, they have, literally 100 rounds or something crazy like that
right.
of a draft. 15% make it. All right? Of all the pitchers only in Little League World Series history, only one has made it to the major leagues as a pitcher. Okay? So what are we saying here? We're saying you can't specialize. And here's the biggest stat of all, in my opinion. 25% of the pitcher's salary that they're getting paid, 25% of it on an annual basis is spent for time for that pitcher to be on the disabled list. So for a quarter of their season, they're getting paid because they can't play because of an injury. Okay, now not all of those injuries are overuse, obviously, all right, from pitchers being on the disabled list, but that's a lot of it.
All right, one thing, I'm sorry. Did you say surgery before professionals? Like,
no,
it's
before you get to the major leagues.
He said scope. He said right. Any type going inside the shoulder.
Right, putting a scope in, basically sticking an arthroscope in your shoulder and you're not currently in the major leagues, they don't have a case of somebody being in the making it to the major leagues after that as a pitcher. That may have changed in the last couple of years.
So even through college or in a minor league?
Right. Right.
Wow.
You've got a greater chance of coming back from ulnar collateral or Tommy John surgery.
Elbow,
okay.
Yeah.
And about 75% of those that have that come back to their previous level of participation. Now, we'll get off on that for a second. Why is that? Why do they come back at that level from Tommy John versus the shoulder? Well, Tommy John, a couple things. It's a year-long process at minimum, more like 18 months before you're cleared to go back and fully pitch, get on a mound, and play. So in that time period of 12 to 18 months, they don't come back stronger as the general public thinks. They've had all that time to fix all the faults that put them on the operating table to begin with. Bad mechanics, weak shoulder, weak lower body, whatever it is. They haven't pitched. They're not abusing their arm. You know, they've had all this time for other body parts to heal and to get stronger and to get their mechanics back. But you put a scope in, it changes a lot of things as far as how that joint operates. You change the pressures within the capsule and a lot of different things. And, you've got a better chance of going and coming back from Tommy John. That doesn't mean you go have Tommy John so you can get better. You know, you're only as good as what you're born with, but you've got a better chance of coming back at that same level from ulnar collateral ligament surgery.
Okay.
All right, real quick.
I have a question from the todaysmeet.com.
All right.
From Jesse, and it says, what do you feel is the best solution for your average Joe for patellar tendon?
Patellar tendonitis.
Patellar tendonitis.
So what is the best, one more time.
Solution. What's the best solution?
For the average Joe for patellar tendonitis.
I think a couple things. Most, if you even look at, in general, overuse stuff is too much too soon. But most athletes, even weekend warriors, are underprepared and they're overworked. Okay, so we don't do a whole lot during the week, and then we're going to go out and play 3 hours of basketball with our buddies. That's not real good for the patellar tendon. Or I didn't get to lift this week, so I'm going to go double up on everything at the gym on Saturday and Sunday. So really what it boils down to is, and it's somewhat of a catch-all on this, you got to be smart. You can't make up for lost time in the conditioning world. These connective tissues can only handle so much. And so if you've got patellar tendonitis, as much as people hate it, rest is a good thing.
Especially the older you get,
right,
the harder it is to...
Right. And a rule of thumb on these type situations, if it's been bothering you for 2 weeks, it's going to take you 4 weeks, double the time, to get over it. Now, that's not always true. There are tricks you can do, but if you just genericize it out, you know, if I've been fighting tennis elbow for 2 weeks, all right, I've got to quit doing the things that aggravate it. That's really hard, so it's probably going to take me about 4 weeks before I'm not having that problem again, if that makes sense. You've got to quit doing the activity that's causing the problem, and most people do not want to give that up.
So basically you're saying suggestion like for patellar tendonitis is to low impact.
Lower the impact, lower the insults, you know. Maybe you can't go play basketball with your buddies, but you could go get on a stationary bike. You can still get some work in.
Go swimming.
Right. Do something. Cross training is huge in a lot of areas. You know, they don't want you don't want somebody throwing year round. I don't want to play football year round. You know, I don't want to play basketball year round. Go do something else for a while. You know, it's like milk. It does a body good. You know, repetitive motions, running, stress fractures, get in a pool, get on a bike, get on an elliptical, change it up, you know. Go play basketball if you're a runner. Your body will thank you later for that. You can't just keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over. That's, you know, that's why we're talking about overuse injuries.
So a good idea for, like, for the younger kids that tend to, like, specialize is more variety mm-hmm. in what you do. It opens up the fields of, you know, I guess, more things you can do later in your life.
Well, later, so. But you're also, you're prolonging that career, so to speak, of that sport you really enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm of the opinion, personally, that it's kind of like your tissues are only given, your shoulder and elbow are only given so many pitches, for a lack of a better way to put it, and you can use them up really quick.
Yeah.
You know, so pitch counts and all those things are important, and we'll talk about some of those risk factors in a little bit, but the more I do something, as I jokingly say about authors, they're only given so many words they can type for books, and after they write so many, you kind of look at them, they run out of ideas. You got to step away take a break, and you can't get on a mound and or in the pool and swim lap after lap after lap after lap day in and day out. You got to mix it up. You can't get on that mound and throw. It doesn't necessarily make you better. It can make you worse.
All right,
cool.
So I'm sure we'll get sidetracked again. I assume that was Jesse over at Adobe. I sent out the email to all the athletic trainers saying, you know, hey, you can have your kids listen in. If it wasn't Jesse from Adobe, then, you know, type in, let us know where you're from and that kind of stuff. So that'd be really cool. So just for us to know who all is happen to be listening in. So let's get back to a little bit more of the evidence, the facts, the research that Bubba has about, you know, we talked about if you have surgery before you get to professional baseball, you're probably like almost 99.99%.
Or even just get your shoulder scoped to find out.
Right, they don't even have to fix anything.
They just looking.
They're just driving around taking a peek, and yeah.
Lowers the chances of...
But if you... Let me back up. We talked about ulnar collateral ligaments. If you look at the incidence of those in high school sports over the last 15-plus years... there's a study done out of the American Journal of Sports Medicine, so I'm trying to give you legitimate information here, not just off the top of my head stuff that I can make up. From 95 to 98, 8% of the high school baseball players, pitchers, had Tommy John. In 99 through 02, it doubled and went to 17%. And from 03 to 06, which is the last time I've seen anything looking at this, it was at 24%. So what does that tell you?
It's increasing. Increasing rapidly. Drastically.
Right. And so let's look at why this is occurring. All right. And so Olson in the American Journal of Sports Medicine, I'm thinking about 06, did a great look at what are the risk factors for these kids, these pitchers having problems. And the biggest one was if you pitch with pain and or fatigue. Okay. So you're overworked. How many different leagues are you playing in and select teams and all this? But 50% of 9 to 14 year olds that had complaints of elbow or they had complaints of elbow or shoulder pain. So half of them out there are hurting, but yet they're still participating. If you throw with fatigue, you have a 36 time increase for injury. Okay? And there's a lot of reasons behind that. If you pitch more than 8 months in a year, you've got to take time off. A Major League Baseball pitcher doesn't pitch 12 months, but skeletally immature kids are doing it yearly.
What's your definition of time off? What are they supposed to be doing during those 4 months?
Something else. Don't pick up a ball. I mean, there's a point to pick up a ball, but it's go play basketball, go play football.
So for baseball, don't pick, during those 4 months, say the entire summer, maybe a plus
well,
a little bit.
I would look at is not in the summer, okay? You're going to play spring and summer. Don't play in the fall, okay? Take the fall off. Go play football. And then if you're a pitcher, as you get close, so in Texas, if we generalize it, they start around February 1, all right? So somewhere around January 1, you're starting now to throw to get your arm back in shape for the season. Now, you can be doing long toss and stuff in that off-season time, but you don't need to be on a mound.
Yeah.
You know, when you get on the mound and you have that, you know, 12-inch height change, a lot of stress has happened to that arm throwing down that hill. Flat ground, throwing work for mechanics, those things are okay, but you really want to limit that during that time off too.
So the high school I used to work at, the starting varsity quarterback was also one of the stud starting pitchers for the baseball team. So what if he's throwing the ball a lot in football? Is that counterproductive to his rest in baseball?
Numbers-wise, as far as the amount of throwing he did, let's say he was throwing 250 balls a day, you're going to get sore. But it's different. He's moving. He's not throwing off a mound. The mechanics are similar, but the weights are different. So it's a different animal altogether. You know, again, I think over time, throw, you're going to have issues. But that's not throwing the football and playing quarterback is not detrimental to his rest time, per se, to go pitch in the spring. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Basically, you're saying the height, right?
Yeah.
Height of throwing off of a mound.
You're changing the stresses put on the joints. And what happens? Once they get on the mound and that white stripes on their right-hand side, and, you know, they're not in the bullpen, they change how they operate. All right, so let's look at some more of these. So, all right, if you throw more than 80 pitches per outing, okay, or if you throw 100 or more innings in a year as a youth, you got a 3.5-time increase for shoulder or elbow surgery. If you make 28 or more appearances in a year, you're up in your chance for that. Now, if you look at that, Little League Baseball has pitch count and pitch rules that they've implemented in the last few years. And a study was done on Little League coaches, and over 50% of them didn't know the rules. So, you know, it's not only a mom and dad thing, it's a coach thing. If you have a fastball over 85 miles an hour, you're at risk. Okay? Not saying at the necessarily at the high school level, though you probably are a little bit, but more that younger group, that stud kid that can just bring it, he's at risk because what's going to happen?
He's going to throw all the time.
They're going to bring him in for an inning as a closer. They're going to pitch him 7 innings here. They're going to pitch him 4 days later in a tournament somewhere for 6 innings. You know, they're going to ride that horse.
So kind of what this comes down to is parents have to look out for the best interest of their child's physical health, not just the opportunity to get a scholarship.
Right, and I've got some scholarship stats that we'll talk about here in a second, too, for that. If you look at also, if you play in 3 or more showcases, you're at risk. If you pitch as well as play another position, now, there's a little bit of info that needs to go with that. Basically, that's if you pitch and play catcher, doesn't really happen that often. Or you're a pitcher and a shortstop or a center fielder. That happens a lot, okay? Those guys are at more risk because they're doing a ton more throwing. Again, it's not on the mound. It's a little different, but just volume-wise, throw. And you're a shortstop, and you're going into the hole, and you're trying to fire it over to first. Okay, there's a correlation between that and pitching a baseball.
Right.
All right? You return to the mound in the same game. That's pretty much now, I believe, against the rules in Little League Baseball. I haven't looked at those recently. And then those that are using something like Advil and ice as a preventative, that means they've probably overdone it already, they're at more risk for having shoulder or elbow problems. And then you've got to factor in bullpens, lessons, specialization, and the parents. So you're getting pitching lessons, you're playing on 2 teams, and dad wants to throw with you to make sure he's getting his money's worth out of your lesson. It's just a constant battle, you know. You cannot, you're never resting. You're never, those tissues are never healing. So we talked about it a second ago about just scholarship. So I took the big 3, pulled it up from the NCAA website, all right? And I'll just read it verbatim basically here. Let's go, it's baseball season now, so we'll start there. In baseball, about 3 in 50 or 6.4% of high school senior boys that play baseball will go on to play men's baseball at a NCAA institution. Okay, so that's Division 1, 2, or 3. Nothing about junior college. about 9 in 100 or 8.9% of those in the NCAA playing that are seniors will get drafted by a Major League Baseball team. All right. 1 in 200 or 0.44% of high school seniors playing will be drafted by a Major League team. Okay, now remember, they have a ton of draft rounds. And they have short season single A, long season single A, double A, and triple A before you ever make it to the majors. So from a numbers standpoint, a lot of people get drafted. Not that many are making it. Yeah. And, you know, chase a dream is fine. But understanding the chance of securing that, you know, that golden ring and making that, it's few and far between. If you look at football, all right, football has the most in participation numbers. It's like 1.1 million or something like that. But about 6% or less than 1 in 16 of high school seniors will go on to play at a will play football at an NCAA institution. Okay?
Say that one more time.
6% will play at the college level. 6% of high school seniors.
That's 1 in 16, right?
1 in 16. Okay? 1 in 50 or 1.7% of NCAA seniors will get drafted by the NFL. In 8 in 10,000 or 0.08% of high school seniors that play football will be drafted by an NFL team. Okay? And that doesn't mean you're getting a huge signing bonus. You know, Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the last round, doesn't get a whole lot of money. Now, he does get drafted, but he doesn't get a whole lot of money. And if you look at basketball, less than 1 in 35 or 3.1% of high school seniors will go on to play at an NCAA school. 1 in 75 or 1.2% of NCAA seniors will get drafted by the NBA. And 3 in 10,000 or 0.03% of high school seniors will be drafted by the NBA.
Mm-hmm. All right, you guys, you get all those numbers? Did I catch all that? It's a lot of numbers, huh?
That's not a very big chance.
No, you've got a better chance of getting academic scholarship money to go to college than you do to get an athletic scholarship. And yeah. I don't know what that number is, but it's a lot greater than this one.
That is true. That is true.
So if we look at throwers real quick again, and then we're going to shift gears a bit and talk about some other stuff we've touched on too. Dr. Andrews talks about a youth thrower's paradox, those kids that he sees in his office. And it's pretty interesting that he talks about these kids have more pain. Maybe it's perceived. He doesn't know. When he looks at them, when he examines them, they really don't have much in the way of findings. But more and more of them are wanting or demanding surgery. And you're trying to talk about it, but they're going, well, he hurts. Something's got to be wrong. So they finally go in and do surgery, and they look at this shoulder or this elbow. There's nothing really going on in there that they could see that would be the problem. And then what they kind of show at the end is it's not as good as the parents think. Either the kid's not as hurt as they thought, they're not as talented as they thought, or both of those things are going on. So again, you know, I'd love my daughter to be a great athlete. She doesn't have it in her. Her talents lie elsewhere. So I think the take home from that is you can't live vicariously through your child. You know, let them do what they're good at and let it go at that.
Yeah, I was, again, talking about Twitter. I think it's at Mom's Team. It's a really good resource. It's like moms that are talking about their sport. Or it's just a way for moms and parents to be educated and things like that. But anyways, one of the things on Twitter was before you put your kid in a club sport and sit on the sidelines and, you know, cheer or gripe at them, be involved in a sport yourself so that you can experience, hey, it's tough to be on the team, to perform with these people cheering for you or cheering against you. And, you know, if you're, say, playing football, somebody lined up against you that wants to knock your lights out.
Right.
So, you know, a parent, be involved in some sport and realize the pressure of what the kid is going through. And you're putting that, you know, 10, 12, 14-year-old through all this pressure when they're not, you know, mature enough to handle that.
Right. They
like
maybe
you said,
not.
Living vicariously.
And I think the other thing to remember about that is think back. I mean, you kids sitting here right now, the size, height, and weight you were at 12 is not what you're at now for a lot of you. So that stud kid at 12 who's 6 inches taller than everybody else and 20 pounds bigger or whatever, you know, when he's 17 years old, he's a half an inch taller than that and 5 pounds heavier. Other kids are going to pass you by, and you know, it's hard. As a parent now, it's hard to remember that, hey, you know, everybody grows different. Everybody's skill set is different. Everybody progresses differently. And that, you know, youth baseball kid that was one out away from going to the Little League World Series as a 12-year-old is the same size now as a junior in high school. He hasn't gotten any better. Yep. He topped out right then. And if you, you know, the best example of that you can give right now is look at Tom Brady in the NFL with the Patriots. He was a sixth-round draft pick, and they only have 7 rounds. Sixth-round draft pick, and he's one of the best quarterbacks there is in the NFL. So, you know, first-round pick doesn't mean you're going to be great. There's first-round busts all the time, and there's sixth- and seventh-round gems like Brady. You just don't know. He got to that level and got some in a system that fit him, and he understands it, and, you know, things take off. And so there's a lot of variables involved. It's not just, you know, your kid's got a horrible coach or they got him in the wrong position or whatever. He may not be that good. And that's tough to understand sometimes.
Real quick, let me jump in. One, Anna wanted to comment. She said she hasn't changed size since she's 12.
So
she's
maybe before that.
See?
But, you know.
You still have some of the same shoes from back then, too?
Yes, and I still wear, like, the same clothes.
Yeah, all right, see?
All right, and then...
It turns out that Jess is from Adobe, and he says that you have an awesome radio voice.
He's right. Yeah, I can't lie.
All right, so Jesse Lopez, thanks for listening in from Adobe High School, my high school alma mater. All right, so now back to
you
the
fact. You had to throw that in there. You just had to throw
he
that
did
in
have
there.
To.
Hey, I'm just trying to give a shout-out to Adobe
it's
for
okay,
listening in.
It's okay, you're at Pasadena now.
Yeah, see? Well, exactly.
You're in the same district. It's okay.
Yeah. See, we're all working together. I just had to give him props for listening in and commenting and mm-hmm. all that stuff, so... Just want to make mm-hmm. him feel mm-hmm. special.
Jesse. It just means he's not working, but that's
Jesse,
okay, too. You're
special. I know, hey, for real, I mean, if you just want to put this on during your sports medicine class, and that's just a, you know, a guest speaker for the day, then, you know,
that's
you're
right,
impressing your administrators because you're using technology.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's a guest speaker without having to come on campus. Just let, you know, Jeremy and Bill do your work for you.
Exactly.
That's right. And then all you got to do is then have them write an essay about it afterwards.
Jackson, your wife commented.
What'd she say?
She was from Rayburn.
That's okay. She can be from Rayburn.
I think you told us that, didn't you?
I think so.
Jeremy and I do have something in common. Both our wives graduated from Rayburn, so.
this
funny. I didn't know where I was from Rayburn.
This live stream thing with the chat room. It might be a little distracting, but it's a lot of fun. So, okay. So we were talking about overuse injuries, 100 pitches in inning. We were talking about NFL, seventh-round gems, undrafted free agents like Arian Foster.
Yeah,
So the chances of making it to the pros are slim. And then have we gotten to scholarships yet?
Yeah, we talked about scholarship. We didn't talk about scholarship. We talked about basically we didn't get to true percentage of earning a scholarship because there's some factors that go with that. But if you look at baseball, and I meant to pull this up for just scholarship in baseball, they get like 12.7 scholarships. It's some weird number. The only sports that I know of that get a nice, even number of scholarships is football and basketball. Football's 85, and I think basketball's 12 or 15. Baseball is like 12.7 or 13.6. Like I said, it's something weird. Every athlete on scholarship has to get at least 25%. So what that basically tells you is no baseball player is getting a full ride. You know, it just doesn't happen. So again, as we talked about a second ago, you've got a greater chance of getting academic money to go to college than you do to get scholarship money for athletics. Mm-hmm. One other little stat on baseball, and then we're going to shift gears, is one of the doctors at Dr. Andrews' conference made mention of approximately, and I'd love to be able to truly look at this and study it, 70% approximately of American-born pitchers that are in Major League Baseball grew up north of the Mason-Dixon line. So you got to do a little geography. Everybody know where the Mason-Dixon line is? It separates north and south, basically, okay, to put it simply. They grew up north of the Mason-Dixon line. So what does that tell you? They did not play year-round sports. or the same sport year-round. They played baseball in the summer. They played football in the fall or soccer. They played basketball in the winter or hockey or something like that. And then here we go in the spring, you know, they're playing something else. So these guys going to Major League Baseball as pitchers, they're a lot healthier. And baseball now, the scouts have started looking at, they're starting to look at, because of all these injuries, what you did as a 12-year-old. How many leagues did you play in? How many showcases? You know, nobody that I know personally has ever got a scholarship offer or been drafted as a 12-year-old. So why are you in Vegas, you know, in November playing in a showcase? It doesn't do you any good. It can do only harm. Nobody's getting signed right then. And so they're now looking at, what did you do before high school and what's your health like? Because they're spending millions on these guys, and if they're going to spend 25% of that, it's going to be so you can't help the team. They're no longer willing to do that.
That's true.
All right, so let's go to the lower body for a second. We talked about Achilles tendonitis.
Same, Ryan.
I said he's smart.
No, I have cheat sheet.
Hey, real quick, you've been talking about Dr. Andrews. Can you give us a little bit of bio? Why is it important that you're talking about the Andrews Institute or whatever?
If you watch ESPN at all, there's always somebody going to see, professionally or college-wise, going to see Dr. Andrews. I wouldn't say he's the father of sports medicine, but he's the most well-known sports medicine physician out there. And his institute, American Sports Medicine Institute, does a ton of research in not only baseball overuse, pitching, but they look at ACLs and many other things. They're the leaders in sports medicine research as far as some of these things they do, and they're the ones coming out with the problem and the fix, be that, you know, a lot of times, is that surgical, is that rehabilitative-wise, or whatever that is. But they're the current leader in that. You know, they're the gold standard when you look at this stuff.
All right. I would say that's a pretty good place to get this information from.
Right.
Them.
Not saying we don't have great sports medicine physicians in Houston, because we do, and we have guys researching stuff right now, but the published data out there, the bulk of it is coming from Andrews and their Sports Medicine Institute. So one of the things besides baseball that I'm pretty passionate about is ACL stuff, and if you look at that, I think in a way you can consider that an overuse injury. And this is the reason why. 75% of your ACL tears are non-contact. Okay? My personal opinion, that number needs to be flipped. 75% of them ought to be from contact. You can't control that. But you've got that kid running down the field, and all of a sudden, boom, they've dropped. As an athletic trainer, the first thing I think, oh, they tore their ACL. You know? They made that plant. They went to stop. They go to change directions. Boom. They just got shot and taken down. That's an ACL tear.
So obviously, I assume you're leading us somewhere with this.
Oh, I'm getting there. Okay.
Yeah. You know he's leading us somewhere.
Yeah, I figured.
I'm leading a horse to water. So the question becomes, why is that? And I think it's multifactorial, too, and we can look at year-round play as part of the reason for that. The other thing I think we can look at is...
You can't just say it's bad running?
Well, you can run. I can run straight ahead all day long, and the odds of me tearing my ACL are pretty slim.
Yeah.
And I don't run very well, so
I just keep getting in the mind of watching the Texans game and watching the punter run down the field.
Well, but see, if you watch him, he planted to cut.
Yeah, he planted to cut, but he went the heel down to
right. And,
the plant.
And there's a lot of reasons why, you know, and women tear theirs, depending on how you look at it, somewhere between 6 and 8 times more than a male does. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. And Dr. Crumby's coming next week. We'll make him talk about that. But, I mean, there's a lot of reasons as far as how they land from a jump, what muscles they activate and what sequence, strength differences, body composition differences, you know, anatomic differences. There's a bunch of reasons. But from a purely things that we can do, because you can't change your anatomy, maybe we don't play 5 club soccer games in a day. Okay, maybe we don't go and lift and lift and lift and lift and lift, but never work on movement skills. What did we do growing up? We played hopscotch and all these jump rope and all these things, but we're no longer doing those in school or as a group. You know, little Johnny or little Sally can't come out and play because they're watching their hitting video from last weekend's tournament, you know, or something like that. They're focusing on, again, that singular sport and specializing, as opposed to, hey, let's go out and play
and have fun.
And have fun. And learn movement skills and athletic skills in that regard. You know, nobody goes out now and makes up games in the yard. And there's a lot of reasons behind that, but a lot of it is because they're specializing.
All right, Mariah, what game do you make up in the yard?
Where I throw stuff at my brother.
That's not a
like,
game.
Okay, no, look, I swear, like, last week, we had water balloons. Me and my brother have this game, like, we'll go, if we have water balloons or anything that could hold water, we'll fill them up with water balloons, and I stand in the street, he stands in the gate, and then, like, because you can't really see, but they tore down our gate, so it's kind of easier now. But, like, we'll keep it, we'll stay right there, and, like, we'll throw water at each other, we'll run around, and whoever's the most wet loses.
Do you ever get him wet, or do you just throw like a girl?
No, I actually aim, and I hit him.
All right, just checking.
It's right. Fun, though.
Sounds like a fun game.
It is.
Do you try to play when it's raining so that you don't have to throw as much?
We actually tried that, but we both fell when it was raining because it's slippery outside.
All right.
So, right, you would.
People still make up random silly games.
Yeah.
I like I the one in the rain.
That.
I like it in the rain. You
I
know,
still do that.
Not
most
much,
wet wins.
Loses.
Well, you know, I mean, and I know times have changed, like I said, for a lot of different reasons. We don't let our kids go out and play like our parents used to. But we, you know, get everybody on the block together and we're playing basketball or we're playing baseball. And it was 4-on-4 in baseball or we're playing touch football. You know, it didn't matter. We make it up. You just couldn't pull the ball. You had it opposite field or whatever you wanted to do. But we were out there messing around all the time. Riding our bikes, and now it's, oh, no, I got to go lift weights, and then I got to go work on my hitting, and then I'm going to go, you know, do this. It's too much of the same of the repetitive motion, you know. You run enough miles over time, you're probably going to get a stress fracture if you don't do something else and rest. You've got to let the body recover. You can't run, well, you can't run day after day after day over an extended period of time and not expect something bad to finally happen. You can't pitch week after week after week after week after week and not expect something bad to happen. Or play soccer weekend after weekend after weekend. That's the other thing. They practice one day a week and go play two, and they're playing multiple games. Realistically, shouldn't that be flipped? They should practice a couple days a week and go play one or two games on the weekend.
Right. Right. So this is kind of random. I had a discussion with my buddy. He's actually going to be in the Houston Firefighters calendar, and He told me that he works out his abs, like, every day. He does some sort of ab thing every day when he's at the gym.
Right.
With abs, is that something overuse, or is that something you can do every day?
You can do it every day, because really they'll you know, break it up, and they'll work obliques and do other things, and so they're working different sections. You know, but you can't work you couldn't bench press every day and make gains. You know, it doesn't happen. You've got to let that... You got to remember this: when we work out, whatever it is, either lifting weights or participating in a sport, we're tearing down the tissue, and we're tearing it down with the thought process of giving it time to heal and rebuild and come back stronger. You know, but if we're doing repetitive motion, this, you know, with load, so bench pressing or squatting, at some point you're going to failure and something's going to give.
All right, so if he was doing them, just switching, like you said, break, maybe doing the, I don't know, just the middle part of the abs, I think it's called rectus abdominis, right? Transverse abdominis.
Right.
Then the obliques the next day, and then go back to the...
Right, you're giving it some time. And they're smaller muscles, too, and you know, so they don't necessarily, function's the wrong word, but they don't necessarily have the same demands as, say, the quads and hamstrings would have, or the pecs for a bench press. You know, and that's the other thing as far as overhead athletes go, whether that be a baseball player, a softball player, swimmers, tennis players, whatever. A lot of people, they want a bench press because they like that look, but they're neglecting the back, the upper back, and what is really stabilizing, you know, stabilizing their shoulder and their shoulder blade or their rotator cuff and scapular stabilizers and some of the other muscles. So really the rule of thumb is for every one push, i.e. bench press, you need at least two, if not three, pull movements to equalize that out. Okay, the pecs are huge muscles, so they can overpower. So that's that, you know, forward-shouldered Cro-Magnon man-looking guy walking around. You've got to get them to work the back to open that up. And if you just think about it real quick on yourself, if I'm all big and bulky here and I try to cock my arm and throw a baseball, I can't do it very well.
Right.
But if I get big and open up here and I cock, my motion is way better. So the better I can fire, cock the gun, the better I can fire the bullet, so to speak. So if I'm right here, yeah.
Remember, we're in school. You might get arrested for saying that.
You're right. I stand corrected. But you know, if I'm forward shouldered and I don't have much range of motion, I'm not very effective. But if I can open up big chest, you know, and I can really get that arm back there, that's more, you know, that's more motion and more time to get speed on the ball.
You still have him.
We can edit that out, but not to the ones that are listening live.
Nah, we won't edit it. It's all part of the... Because then we'd have to edit out like the last 5 minutes because you're giggling through the whole thing.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's why we have you on here. That adds a different element. Depth. So basically the point of that was you can prevent some of the overuse injuries by making sure you have a well-rounded lifting program.
I could say, if you just say well-rounded strength and conditioning program. You know, you've got to, for an overhead athlete, you got to work your rotator cuff and scapular stabilizing muscles that are small little muscles, but they fatigue easy. And so, like I talked about earlier, if you're pitching with fatigue, you're setting yourself up. So if you go to the gym and you fatigue your rotator cuff, you haven't done yourself any justice in that way either, if that makes sense.
Unless you're not going to be throwing the next day or two or three.
Or three or four, yeah.
So,
you know.
So it's good to work the muscles as long as you are building in rest.
Right.
So.
And yeah, exactly. And with that being said, if we talk about that for a second, and we talked about ulnar collateral ligament injuries, you know that every time you pitch a baseball, which is pitching a baseball is the fastest motion there is. It's 7,000 degrees per second. So if you equate that into more layman's terms, if you ever played Twister and you flick the little spinning dial, it's about 20 revolutions of that, or it's about 90 miles per hour. Your arm is moving to throw a baseball. So it's a very, very fast motion in the blink of an eye that it's happening. But every time you throw a baseball, the strength of the ulnar collateral ligament is exceeded by the forces of throwing that baseball. Okay, so in theory, every time you throw, you can tear your ulnar collateral ligament. So what does that tell you? All the other structures around there, your forearm musculature, your biceps, your triceps, your rotator cuff, all those things have to be strong to protect that in other areas. So you get a weak shoulder and you're playing through this pain, you're fatigued, now you're throwing. And if normally, if you're up here in what would be a 90-90 position, 90 to, your arm is, that's, you know, scarecrow look, and that's your normal throwing, all of a sudden if I drop down because my shoulder's sore and I can't get it up there, and I cock my arm right now, if you tried this, you'd feel it at your elbow. If I get up here and cock it, I feel it more at my shoulder, okay? So we're pitching through pain, my shoulder's weak, my elbow's taking the brunt. And that's why, you know, people scoff a little bit at baseball guys. Oh, he's got tendonitis of his finger. He can't pitch. Well, if I can't do what I normally do in the most mechanically advantageous way, I'm going to adapt, and I'm going to set myself for bigger failure. So set them down, let them get rest, let them get healthy, and then come back, and hopefully we don't have that problem again.
So I was just going to type in a question while you were there, talking there. So you were talking about building the rotator cuff muscles or the scapular stabilizers. So we want to work out and lift weights and make those things strong, but we also want to maintain the flexibility, because if, you know, I make my rotator cuff muscles tight or my shoulder muscles tight, then I'm going to lose flexibility and then try and compensate for torquing
or losing
form. So what would you say is a good balance, you know, like work out one day and then stretch the next, or work out one day, give a day off, throw the next day and work out, you know, give a day off, throw the next day?
I think it really, that answer depends on what part of the year are you in. You know, are you in season? Are you out of season? So it changes. You know, are you a starting pitcher or are you a relief pitcher? All those things play into it. But what I would say is, if you just look at the flexibility aspect, most throwers that have problems are also losing what's called internal rotation. So external rotation is that cocking part. Internal rotation is that follow-through aspect. And if you were to, and there's been a lot of studies on this, but if you look at it, there's some numbers they look at that if you lose X amount of internal rotation, and I think it's less than 20 degrees compared to your non-throwing side, you're setting yourself up. And so you've got to gently stretch that. You don't want to aggressively stretch your internal rotation. You want to strengthen your rotator cuff and scapular muscles, but you don't want to fatigue them. There's all these issues. And so really what it boils down to is find somebody that is knowledgeable in that area that can work with you to help you do that. You know, you don't want to go on the internet and look at something and go, well, this, you know, this worked for me. Well, it may not work for the next 100 people. Find somebody, a licensed athletic trainer, a physical therapist, and other people that can help do those kind of things for you.
All right, so the kids are taking off again. They're going to lunch.
Bye, guys.
Mariah did a lot of acting out. She was kind of mimicking whatever Bubba was doing. So I think she was learning. She was a good active participant in today's show.
We'll put a star on your locker.
Yeah, we'll put a star on your locker. I haven't heard much from the chat room recently.
They're all napping.
All right, so you were just talking about find somebody who knows what they're talking about. You know, there's, but then at the same time, we were talking about going to pitching lessons, and then you're pitching with your dad. So, you know, typically you would think of, just say even a high school coach might have pitching lessons, private pitching lessons, where, you know, kids would come in and pay them, and they'll do this kind of thing. So how do you, one, how do you know he's qualified? Two, how do you, again, set up that schedule so that you can go to your pitching lessons, you can do your work, you can do your stuff, and still build in that rest? And maybe even when would you put in pitching lessons as part of your, you know, off season, as part of your preseason?
I think it's part of your preseason. But to back up for a second, how do you know they're qualified? There is no certification to be a pitching coach. Okay, so there's no test you take, no demonstrations that you have to do. There's no licensing or whatever. So what does it boil down to? You got to interview them.
Salesman.
You got to talk to them. Just because, my opinion is, just because you pitched in pro baseball doesn't make you a pitching coach. You know, just because I lifted weights when I played high school football does not make me a strength coach. You've got to find somebody that understands. So I'm going to talk to somebody that understands biomechanics. You know, one of the best people for pitching that I know that used to be in this area is actually an athletic trainer slash physical therapist. So he has a biomechanical background and an understanding of that. There's some very good certified strength coaches that can do some work on pitching, but they're not going to work the mechanical side as much as they're going to work your deficits and the other things. The problem with pitching, or pitching lessons, in my opinion, I think is twofold. Number one, if you're paying me $50 a lesson, I'm going to tell you whatever you need to hear. A lot of people, let me back up. A lot of people are going to tell you whatever they want you to hear so they can keep getting $50 a lesson. Okay, that's the nature of business. I understand that. But the other thing is, bodies are changing. And again, how I function at 12 is not how I'm going to function at 14. It's not how I'm going to function at 16. You know, you got that 14-year-old that can't walk and chew gum. Would I really want to go do a lot of pitching work with him? Because, you know, he's that motor moron. He can't really get it done right now, you know. And so I think in some ways I want them to mature a little bit.
I think we're going to quote you on that.
Okay, that's fine. You know, let them mature a little bit before I'm going to go spend my money, because I think I'm just throwing money, you know, good money onto bad at that point, in my personal opinion. So, but again, you've got to go interview them and talk to them, and how do they do things, you know, how much of it's throwing off the mound, how much of it is this. What are their thoughts on playing? How many times do they want you to have lessons? All that stuff factors into it, you know? And there's no one set proper way to teach throwing. You know, how I would work with a 6'5" pitcher is different than how I'd work with a 5'10" pitcher. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's arm slot, that spot where they're releasing the ball, is different. All those things factor into it. So there's a ton of variables. So it's not the slickest looking presentation or the slickest DVD or whatever. You really got to go and do some research and talk to these people. And I think part of the thing would be, over time, you got to have a certification to be a strength and conditioning coach. in a way, why shouldn't you have a certification to be a pitching instructor? You know? Because you're actually taking people's arms into your possession, so to speak.
Well, that's true. But mostly, the parents need to be educated.
They need to be educated, and you got to take the rose-colored glasses off. Yeah. You know? I mean, what are you trying to accomplish with pitching lessons? Increases velocity 15 miles an hour? Not going to happen with just mechanical changes alone. They've got to get bigger, faster, and stronger, so to speak.
Stronger, yeah.
They've got to get rest. They've got to want to do it. Sometimes they've got to throw less than what they're throwing to increase velocity. Sometimes they've got to throw more than what they're throwing to increase velocity. You know, maybe they're strong in a lot of areas, but weak in one. So we got to figure that out. Maybe if we fix the weakness, they throw better. You know, so there's a lot of things that go into that. And, you know, it's not going to be, you come see me 5 days a week for 12 years and your kid will be throwing great. No, I'm not doing that. You know, maybe I want to see you one day a week here for a month. Then we're going to go to every other week. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. And again, if you're going to pay the money, what are you looking for? What are you trying to accomplish? What are your goals? What's the instructor's goals? What's his background?
So from kind of what we're saying, it sounds like it's a full-time job just to train your child to be an athlete. So again, we're going to focus on baseball. So like if I have to make sure that the workouts that they're doing, they get rest. So at the high school, you know, we got to check and follow up on what they're doing on rest. We got to educate the kids, say, hey, you know, you need to do this for rest. We got to make sure we interview the pitching coach. And then they're going to play summer and spring baseball. So then they're in the fall, they, you know, are just taking time off resting or even playing football or something like that. It sounds almost like we're saying, you know, you need to be a year-round baseball player just to be an effective baseball player because all this.
In theory. But if you're a year-round baseball player, you're probably not very effective because you've broken down.
So it's a tough situation.
And so it is. And so really it comes down to, if you look at the, you know, again, if you look at the scholarship stats, why are you playing? Are you playing because you love the game and you're taking lessons because you want to get better? Or are you playing and taking lessons because you're trying to get a scholarship? And I think they're two different animals entirely. And if you're trying to get a scholarship, in my opinion, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Again, you know, you can take that money you're spending on lessons and going to Vegas and other things and invest it, you can pretty much pay for college, you know. And if you do half good on your academics, you can get academic money. So you got to look at realistically, why are you doing this? And I don't know.
So if you really look at the numbers, the ones that actually get the scholarships are the ones that really are gifted athletes.
Right, right.
They're not trained. They're gifted. Then they train, and then that's what makes them better.
They're better to begin with,
yeah.
And they get some training that puts them up another level. You know, and the other way I look at it when I talk to kids about football scholarship stuff is not every kid can go play at Alabama and Texas and LSU and Michigan and USC. Okay? Those kids are the studs of the studs. Not every kid's going to go get a scholarship offer from Baylor University's baseball team or LSU's baseball team, or Cal State Fullerton's baseball team, and those that are getting those scholarship offers are probably getting drafted in a pretty low round, or a high round, you know, as well. Like, we had a kid when I worked at Kingwood High School, was a second-round pick from the Rangers. So he decided he was going to go play baseball over going to college. Well, as a second-round pick, you're getting enough money you can do that. Plus, baseball got smart where they're giving those signees 8 semesters of college. So you're getting your 4 years guaranteed after you're done or in the off season or whatever. So it's a win-win situation at that point. But he hasn't made it to the – he was drafted in 05. He hasn't made it to the big leagues yet. And he was a pretty good athlete. Starting quarterback.
Yeah, there's a lot of good baseball players that are lost in the minors.
Right. He could have played on our basketball team. Starting quarterback, could have played on our basketball team and done well. Obviously a 3-year starter on the varsity in baseball, and he's not made it to the big leagues. You know, so there's no guarantees. But that kid, he didn't play year-round. Now, he wasn't a pitcher. He was a position player, but he was a shortstop. But he didn't play year-round. And there's something to be said, I think, from a coaching standpoint of let's take a little bit of the football mentality to the baseball field. You know? And you can take a little bit of the baseball mentality to football and have it work too.
I agree with all of that because I don't think athletes should be playing like basketball players. They play year round basketball. I mean, it's like, okay. Well,
right. They're going to go play AAU, and then they're going to play with their buddies on the high school team in some kind of summer league somewhere else. And
I mean, they have.
They're wondering why their knees hurt.
You know, league.
Fall league. And then,
right before the season starts, they have a fall league. I mean, it's like,
why is my ankle sprained from March not better and it's November? Hello? You know.
So real quick, I've talked about this with my beautiful wife, who is, I think, still listening, and she commented in the chat room a second ago.
She's still awake.
Yeah, she's still awake. So what do you feel about overlapping seasons? So basketball and soccer overlap. We had, you know, a girl here. She would go to basketball practice and then go play a soccer game that night. In my personal opinion, my kids will not play overlapping seasons, period.
Okay, define overlapping. High school basketball and high school soccer?
Right.
At the school?
Right. Well, no, any two overlapping seasons, period. So if you play club soccer and it overlaps with football, basketball, baseball, then you won't play another sport at that time.
How about I give you a semi-politically correct answer? I think if it's two high school sports and they overlap, you can find a way to make that work because you've got coaches in an environment with the kid that you can work around that. Maybe we're not going to practice as much because now we're into more game playing. So we're going to do some things to give them some rest. Where the problem comes in is you're playing high school soccer and club soccer.
At the same time.
Well, they got to go to their club practice. Well, we played Friday night in a district ball game in soccer, but we're going to go up and go to Bear Creek and play Saturday, Sunday club games. And then I'm going to come back on Monday and practice with the high school team and play on Tuesday and practice on Wednesday with the club team. There's where you get in the problem. I've seen it effectively done where you've had the basketball soccer athlete or the track softball athlete, whatever it is. You can work around those because they're like, hey, I'm going to get them for practice this day, but I know you got a game, but we're just going to let them stand and look at what we're doing, walk through some things. You've got a more captive audience, so to speak, that you can get a better handle on that within the realm of the high school itself.
So you don't feel that is counterproductive to the rest schedules, to the overuse thing? Because, I mean, soccer and basketball, there's a lot of running.
Right, a lot of running, but they're also different. You know, one's a little more aerobic, one's a little more anaerobic, depending on what position you're playing in soccer. And some of the skills are similar, but, again, to me, they're different enough sports that it's not the same repetitive motion over and over and over. And the rest is the trick, but, you know, how do you get a high school kid to get more than about 6 hours of sleep anyway? I don't know, you know. So you just got to do the best you can in that. But I think, you know, if they can help you both, you find a way to let them do it. You know, and if they want to go play golf too, hey, God bless you, let's go do it. But it's when you're playing concurrent seasons in the same sport that it's really, you know, problematic. Or you get done with high school volleyball and you get 3 days off and the club season starts and it goes until the summer, into the summer, but you're also playing summer league with your school buddies, the same sport over and over and over and over and over. It doesn't have to just be baseball,
So, for example, we had one of our girls, Ashley, she would play volleyball here, she would play basketball here, she would play softball here, and she played club volleyball at some point. She ended up going to college to play volleyball. But that's like four different seasons within a year. Is that too much?
I think it's too much. You've got to have some rest somewhere.
And she was in band, too. And so, you know, the marching band, like her freshman, sophomore year.
Right.
So,
you know, that, you can argue some marching and stress fracture things, but you've got to have some rest somewhere. And rest isn't one day a week all year. At some point, you got to have more than that. And by rest, it's not just shut it down, lay on the couch like I would. It's shut it down, but I can go lift weights or I can go swim or I can go run and I can do sprints. I'm actively resting. I'm still letting my body heal, but I'm conditioning and maintaining my cardiovascular fitness during this time.
So basically you're saying they do need an off season.
They need everybody needs an off season.
Yeah, they've got to do something
from that sport. But
right, that's why we have the summer for teachers, you know.
Yep.
I mean, right now, I don't know of a teacher that really is happy about seeing a kid. You know, they're sick of seeing them. Kids are sick of seeing them. You know, you need that time away.
Now's a good time of year. The testing is officially over, I believe.
Yeah, but finals are coming. So, you know, I mean, but finals are half day, so that's not too bad. But
yeah.
But, you know, everybody needs time away.
Right.
That's why the vacation's invented. The vacation, though, usually you need a vacation from the vacation. You know, but you've got to have time off.
Yeah, kids need to understand that. Athletes need to understand that they need a time off.
Look at the collective bargaining agreement in the NFL. You know, what did they want? They wanted more time away from the facilities, less organized team activities, the OTAs. Make them start later because they would have already had OTAs in a lot of places weeks ago. Now that stuff is just fixing to come up. You know, they've had very little mini camp work with all the players after the draft. That would have already happened quicker. You know, that's a violent game, and those guys are saying, we've got to have more time away. We need more off time. You know, and as they get closer, those guys ramp it up, and they're in the weight room, and they're conditioning more with their strength and conditioning coaches in an organized, you know, controllable setting for that. But they need their time away, you know. It doesn't matter the sport. Just it's, you know, spring and Josh Hamilton's hitting 4 home runs in a game, so that's what we're talking about right now. But it doesn't matter the sport. You know, we're getting ready to work the Ironman Triathlon this weekend. I don't know how those guys do it. You know, so they're fixing to swim 2.4 miles, bike 112, and run 26.2 all in one day.
I couldn't do any one of those in one day.
I couldn't drive that. I don't want to drive that far combined in one day, you know, much less exert myself.
Right.
I don't know that I could dog paddle for 2.4 miles to begin with. You know.
Maybe float on your back.
Yeah, but you're going nowhere. That's the problem, you know.
2.4 hours. You just float for 2.4. There you go.
Yeah. You know, so
2.4 miles in the water.
Yeah. No.
And it's not just splashing around, you know, dunking your kid. You're actually exerting yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go get bent over in an arrow position on your bike for 112 miles. And then you're going to go, oh, well, that was fun. Let's lace up the shoes and run a marathon. You know, I'd love to know what the caloric output is, you know, for that one. And the ones I've talked to, they all say, oh, we just eat whatever we want. We burn it all. You know,
yeah, probably. They burn it all up in training.
Yeah, look at, you know, if you just, I can't remember, they showed the day in the life of like Michael Phelps and what all he ate. You know, he ate for breakfast what I would eat in like a day and a half of yeah. 4 meals, you know, 5 meals.
But he burns it
off.
Oh, yeah,
he burned it, you know, burned it off. I got a buddy from college who would say, I can talk that off in about an hour. Just give me a chance. And he could.
I think you're running pretty close to
that. No. No. I brought notes. If not, there'd be a lot of crickets chirping right now.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm sure we could always have much more to say, but do you got any other key points you want to bring home?
Not on the overuse thing. You know, it really boils down to go have fun and play, but you got to have that rest. And get away from it. Go play something else. It's rest. It's, you know, it's not repetitive. So go play something else. You know, growing up, we had seasons. We played football in the fall, basketball in the winter, and baseball in the spring. And seasons have been lost. It's now one long season. And that's unfortunate. You know, because there's some really good kids that could help your football team that play baseball or vice versa or the basketball team, but they want to specialize. And I think, you know, they're doing it themselves a disservice from a involvement aspect and from a physical aspect as well.
Yeah, I don't even want to go on that. So I'll say, and some kid may listen to this, I hope they do, that I don't think kids in high school or any level, this level, should specialize just because they're not getting paid to do it.
Right.
You
right.
know, and they're not really that good. So
well,
it
I think
doesn't matter if they're that good anyway.
If you want to specialize,
you need a variety.
You do. If you want to specialize, make it your junior year and say, look, I'm a lot better at football than I am at baseball.
But we got kids that specialize, and they're not even good at that sport.
No, you're right.
So they really right. shouldn't be specializing.
But, you know, if you think, okay, this is what I want to go pursue, then I think at your junior year, okay. But like I said, the kid that got drafted in the second round played football, baseball, yeah. You know. There's no benefit in going to that one. There's probably more detriment than there is benefit.
Because you look, some of the best professional athletes, when you go back, they played more than one sport.
Right.
And they were good
at
more than one sport.
Well, you look at like the guys that, you know, a lot of these baseball guys go, well, I could have gone to college and played golf, or I could have been a football player. I just chose to go play baseball. There's a ton of those. Yeah. You know, that, again, it goes back to they're the exceptional athlete. Baseball or football or basketball is what they just were better at over the other sports, or what they gravitated to over the other sports.
Yeah, or they enjoyed more.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead here. There's always people that support us. You know, I just followed at Andrews INT, so that's Andrews Institute, because Bubba was talking about them playing them up for, you know, how good they are in sports medicine. So I just followed them, and I want to thank them for all their research and stuff that they're doing for us, and then making that available so we can educate our kids and educate our listeners and parents and things like that on take a break, you know, do things correctly, focus on form over the total weight or whatever, and things like that. And so, you know, the Andrews Institute, I just followed them on Twitter, mentioned them in a little tweet telling them we were talking about them. So maybe they'll listen. I'm sure they got a whole bunch of followers. But Pasadena ISD Education Foundation, they, you know, I've talked about them before, the grants. That's the reason that we were able to have all this equipment. And, you know, we were able to have at least two people listening live in the chat room commenting. Because of the equipment that they've, you know, donated through funds, we have computers that are fast enough to process recording and show notes and the chat room and all that other stuff. And so,
yeah,
find somebody to pay for whatever it is that you have. You know, you got to sell them on it. But our education foundation does an excellent job. And so I want to definitely thank them. My words of wisdom Bill already took. I'm not sure if he read that or through the show notes or if he just came up with it on his own.
You didn't see him scrolling down earlier and just looking and going, I'm going to steal this?
No, I didn't steal it.
All right, so we'll just go ahead and reiterate that. Don't specialize when you're in high school. Don't specialize. Or if you say you only want to play baseball, then schedule you in an off season, like we've been talking about. So some kids, they don't like football or basketball. They just don't want to play it. Okay, that's fine. Then, you know, don't play baseball on four different leagues, you know, for 12 months a year, scheduling some off time. And, you know,
those kids that don't get the off time or do the off time are the same ones that quit before they finish high school.
Yeah. You were telling me last time, I don't think
or
you
they
mentioned
burn out
it.
Or they get that, hurt.
And that's
or
why they burn out or they get hurt, repetitively hurt, or they're just like, you know, I don't want to pick up a ball anymore. I'm sick of wearing baseball pants. You know, they're done with it.
You were telling me last time, I think you said there was one kid that was in the Little League World Series that played professional baseball.
One Little League World Series pitcher that made it as a pitcher in the Major League Baseball.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're just dragging your kid to all these games. And, you know, it's a great experience for them, but they're probably not going to make it. One, because they haven't developed and they might not be that good. But two, they're just going to get worn out.
Do they want to play or do you want them to play is the big question.
I think all those Little Leagues sports aren't for the kids. It's for the dads who,
want to live vicariously through their child.
Yeah, they want to. I think it's ridiculous to have a 5- and 6-year-old, you know.
Travel team. Why?
You can just go play and t-ball and all that's fun, but if you're taking them to all these places and have these all-stars and then you play in the all-star and then you play the select teams and you keep putting these teams together and then they go, you know, I mean, granted, it goes on national TV and all this, and there's a big thing for the 13-year-olds.
Well, I don't think the Little League World Series ought to be televised, but that's just me.
And I don't think they should be playing international.
All right, so we're going to start a movement. ESPN, we are boycotting the Little League World Series.
I already do. I don't watch it.
Okay, I don't have cable, so I don't either.
Yeah, it's on Channel 13. So
yeah, the championship game is.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
Because channel, because ABC owns Disney and ESPN. So,
all right. So, anything else? All right, then we're gonna close it out. If you'd like to contact us, you can check out our website www.pasadenaisd.org/phs/athletic-training. You can listen on live stream, like we had Jesse and my beautiful wife today. That's ustream.tv, and then search Sports Medicine Broadcast in the channel section. And if you want to join in the conversation, you go to until we get the chat function working on Ustream, you can go to todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast.
That's cool. Or you can follow us on Twitter at PHS Sports Med, Google Plus at PHS Athletic Training, Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. If you want to talk to Jeremy or myself personally, you can call us on the office phone at 713-740-0310, extension 01312, and that's the main athletic training training room phone.
All right. Next week we should have Dr. Crumby. Bubba mentioned that. He's our basically team orthopedic surgeon, orthopedic doctor. In 2 weeks we have the Michael Jordan of concussion management, Dr. Summer Ott.
Yes.
Yeah, so that'd be pretty cool because, you know, all this stuff about concussions. Concussions are huge now. So, but finally, if you would like to download the app, PHS Athletic Training on the Android market. If you want to, it's an easy way to listen to the stream, the podcast, kind of keep up with things. If you want to post pictures to the live album of whatever athletic training stuff you're doing, you can do that there. I believe that still works. If not, then, well, you can still download the app anyways. So, for the Sports Medicine One kids, for Jeremy, Bill, and Bubba, that's a wrap.